everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Capital Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're going to bring you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us on the Heritage Radio Network, and you can always find us on restaurantguysradio.com, and of course, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.
Morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, things are good?
Yeah, things are great. I'm sort of planning, we have the restaurant all planned out for Easter in both of the restaurants, and I'm planning my own household Easter thing, maybe.
Big old Italian Catholic holiday. Lots of people have traditions around this time of year.
You may not know this, but I'm not Italian.
Oh, I knew.
So
I definitely knew.
You may have the big Italian traditions. I've got the. You Italians have some. You have
little
some
Irish traditions.
Oh, come on,
you have.
You guys, first of all, Easter is a strong. It's one of it plays to our strengths with the Irish because lamb is a big part of it. That we're good with the lamb.
Let's see,
leg of lamb. And you guys, by the way, Easter plays to your weaknesses. Yeah, I know the Pasqua. You've got the lamb too. You do lamb well too. But you got that cake with the eggs in it, the bread with the egg, the colored eggs.
The St. Joseph's stuff and the Easter pastries. The worst Easter food that the Italians make is a thing called the wheat pie or the pizza gran. Uh-huh. It's basically a grain pie.
Sounds delicious.
It's bitter and horrible, and it was one of those things that we made every year,
uh-huh.
And nobody ate it.
Jesus suffered, you guys. It was more than Jesus had on the cross.
It was one of those things that just sat on the table and literally, like, not cut into.
Mm. It was tradition. So you got to make it.
So, and, you know, and it's one of those things where, you know, as a little kid, you're sitting there, you're like, oh, there's a pie there. Mom, what's that pie? Oh, that's the grain pie. You won't like it. Really, it's pie though, Mom.
Right.
I love pie. Why can't I? Can I have a little pie? You're not gonna like it. Can I have some? Sure, Mom.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like it.
And your dad made you eat it, right? Your dad made you. Well, you also do the pizza gain or the pizza rustica, which
pizza
is
pizza rustica.
That's a good one.
Is a spectacular one. The egg and salami and cheese pie. And that's the kind of meat pie that I like there.
Those of you who aren't coming to dinner, Catherine Lombardi can just go look this up somewhere.
We've talked about it before on Easter. It's like I would call it an Italian quiche.
Yeah.
You know, it's got the Italian cheeses instead of Swiss cheese. It's got an egg instead of ham in it. It's got, you know, salamis and things
like
that.
What is that thing you do with the egg, where the egg is, the colored egg is baked into the bread?
Ah, I forget the name of it.
You never eat that either.
It was called like an Easter cake or something. Basically, it was a bread, and on top of the bread, a hard-boiled egg was baked into the top of the bread, and there was like a cross put over the egg.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the bread wasn't very good.
Yeah. And who the hell wants an egg?
And it was a boy. It was a hard-boiled egg.
Yeah, I got to tell you something about Easter eggs. In the tradition of, you know, we all dye Easter eggs, and I used to like dyeing Easter eggs. I never really was a big fan. Yeah, and I guess, you know what, 1920, you're like, oh, good, I got a hard-boiled egg. At least I got some food. call me a spoiled brat, but who gives a crap? I mean, you know, I'm sorry. You know,
okay, egg salad, yay!
And you throw away the colored shells anyway. I was like, that was sort of a fun thing to do, but, we were happy to have an egg, you know, I guess.
You know what?
Chocolate egg.
I realize what I really like, the eggs that I really like,
yeah,
are the plastic ones filled with candy.
Yeah, right. Or the chocolate ones with the peanut butter in the middle, you know. But I do love the tradition. I love the family comes together. It does play to our strengths, and we do a roasted leg of lamb, and... We have an Easter egg hunt out in the backyard.
And you sing an Irish lullaby, don't you?
There's a little Irish singing going on. I gotta be
honest.
Don't
you? Not sure that's Irish, but I'm close.
I don't know. I don't know what the hell you're doing.
I was doing the leprechaun from Lucky Charms. Yeah.
You know what? That's exactly what you were doing. You're right. And new blue diamonds. Oh my goodness. So well, I hope everyone out there is having a good and happy Easter planned. We're gonna talk about a very spring thing as well when we come back. We're gonna talk about a new documentary that's out there on bees. And you know, bees, honey, springtime. It's all tied in together. So we'll stick with it.
Very important to our springtime are bees, or as Chris Farley, the late great Chris Farley, used to say, bees.
And,
so only half of you got that joke, but those of you who got it, tell the other half why
yeah,
it was funny.
Exactly. Well, you know, as we would like to keep having springtimes with things blossoming in them, I think you should stick around and listen to the show. It's pretty cool, and we'll tell you where to go catch the movie near you as well. Stick with us. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys at RestaurantGuysRadio.com and the Heritage Radio Network. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, The Restaurant Guys. And our guest today is Taggart Siegel. He is an Emmy-nominated, award-winning documentarian. He is behind The Real Dirt on Farmer John, which we did a documentary with, we did an interview with Farmer John a few years ago. It was a wonderful film. And his new film is Queen of the Sun, What Are the Bees Telling Us?
Taggart, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Taggart, your first story about Farmer John was really compelling. And maybe some of our audience doesn't know exactly what's going on with bees throughout North America and throughout the world. What was compelling about the bee story that you chose to do a documentary on it?
Well, what's interesting, I didn't know that bees were so crucial to our food system. And even making a film called The Real Dirt on Farmer John, you think I would, but the reality is most people don't really realize that this insect contributes to almost three-quarters of all our all the foods and plants in the world that are needed to keep the world abloom. And this insect, I just had no idea, and it was dying out. And when something is dying out and there is a catastrophe on hand, that made me pick up my camera very quickly. And it was like, okay, well, what's going on? Why are they dying out? And it was one of those films that was pulled me very, very, very strongly, especially having a 3-year-old daughter who was coming into this world and had a lot in front of her, and I really felt like saving bees were one of the most crucial things.
Well, for most of us, bees just kind of do their thing. We never think twice about, you know, how it's happening or why it's happening. They're just there. They pollinate. The flowers grow, and it's just all part of that process that I think so many, certainly in America, that we just don't think about how it actually works and how important certain species are to the whole ball rolling.
Yes.
Michael Pollan is on your film. He says that 40% of our food, that's to say 4 out of every 10 bites that you eat, are pollinated by a honeybee. I mean, these things are crucial, right?
Well, they're so crucial that we have to help save them. And that's why there's all these movements right now in the world, like to ban these very, very toxic pesticides that are being put on our food. I mean, who really wants to eat the food that has deadly chemicals for bees and for humans on a long-term scale? So it really is very clear what is helping this onslaught of bees dying out throughout the world. And it's a pesticide from Bayer in Germany that developed a neonicotinoid that goes into the plant systemically, so it's throughout the whole plant. And bees like to go and gather their pollen from these plants. And these plants have these deadly pesticides in them. And so there's a phenomenon called colony collapse disorder where they're literally not coming back to the beehive. So the hive is left alone with the queen and the honey, and there are none of the worker bees. They've all disappeared, have died out. And this is a new phenomenon. So this is why we really need to do something about it.
And entire colonies are dying off. I mean, it's not, you know, you're not having, like, you know, half of the colony will die. The entire colony will die off, and that strain of bees are dead.
What Pollan says in your movie is he says we've lost 5 million colonies, each having 20,000 to 60,000 individual honeybees. It's conceivable we could lose the honeybees that make the food. We're not talking about it like on the margins, a little bit of a decline that we should worry about, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's if you think about it, it's like 36% of the hives last year, according to the USDA, died out. So if this continues on, then we're not going to get that the food that we really enjoy. And if we all love food, and we all do, and we all depend on it, how are we going to get the cherries and the apricots and the peaches and the almonds? You know, it's really like a deadly cocktail that is just sitting there ready to explode almost, because we ship, what, 3/4 of all bees are sent to the almond fields in Central Valley for the multi-billion-dollar industry of almonds, and these bees are not treated very well because they're trucked across the country, and they're feeding into this monoculture that Michael Pollan expresses in the film, that it all comes down to monoculture, that we've created this problem because of these systems that we have in place. And for beekeepers to survive now, they're sort of caught into the industry where they make all their money from these pollination services. So they truck their bees, they feed them corn syrup, and as Michael Pollan says, nothing more viscerally offensive than feeding honeybees, the creators of honey, genetically engineered corn syrup.
So I want to go back for just one second, so and kind of catch everybody up. So basically what's happening out in California is you have all the almonds for the entire world are planted in within a very, I don't want to say a very small area because it's a pretty big area, but they're all in one centralized place. And in order to get all those almonds pollinated within the short period of time that they need to be pollinated, a tremendous amount of, and it's 3/4 of the bees.
3/4 of all bees are sent out there from Michigan, Wisconsin.
Of all bee colonies are sent to this one location where diseases can cross-pollinate and all the problems and pathogens that can be happening to a bee colony will literally cross-pollinate into from one bee colony to another one. And so again, you have all of these bees in one central location at one time, because that's where all the almonds are in the world. And if we thought about it and planted almonds sporadically around the world, we wouldn't have this kind of a problem. Anyway, I'm sorry. So continue to some of the deleterious effects
of
that.
Well, especially, I mean, there's 740,000 acres of almonds. When I started filming, there were 600,000 acres. It just keeps growing and growing, this industry, and there's much more pressure for beekeepers to bring their bees in, and they haven't figured out a solution for that situation. They you know, one suggestion was dig out 15,000 acres in the 740,000 acre area and plant flowers for the pollinators, and I think that would be one solution, except that they do a lot of aerial pesticide spraying too. So this may not be the solution, because the solution is not to continue on these monocultures, because it goes against nature completely. I mean, as Michael Pollan says, this is insane the way that we farm. And we probably need to really change our practices and have a lot more diversity in order for bees to be happy and humans too.
Well, the issue is you can't have wild bees in an area that only has almonds, because they can only pollinate and be prolific for those 2 weeks a year. They need a diverse flora that they can go to, because things will flower and give them food.
Bees need to eat all summer long.
Bees need to, right. They don't just need to eat for 2 weeks. They need to eat the whole time. So there are no wild bees in these almond orchards, because there's no way they could survive 2 weeks a year.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. They can't plant flowers in between the rows, because they need it to be bare, because they have frost that come in, and they're afraid that the almond trees will die, so they even say we can't plant anything under these trees. For 2 weeks they get it goes, you know, these trees pollinate, the bees come in, they get their pollen, and then it's a desert after that. There's no food for them at all, so they have to be trucked in and then trucked to the next monoculture and to the next monoculture. And we've put way too much strain on these little insects that love being like in their one area where they're orientated towards the direction of the sun. They like to live on a healthy, diverse flora. And like the olden days, there used to be a lot more bees on family farms, and it was just kind of a thing that everybody did. You know, they had their local beekeeper, and the bees weren't shipped around.
Well, before I want to talk about family farms and how people can raise bees at home, and it's surprisingly something people are doing more and more, and there are some obstacles to it as well. But I just want to point out, when we talk the catastrophic nature of what it is that we're playing with, when you think, oh, that species might go extinct, you're not talking about something where there are, you know, 500 breeding pairs left, but you're talking about something that we need a lot of bees to make agriculture work, to make feeding the world able to work. But why it's catastrophic is because we bring 75% of the bees in the United States and Mexico and Canada to one little area for 2 weeks a year and put them all together. We don't let the president and the vice president fly on the same plane. Do you know why? Because if something happens to that plane at that time with both of them on there, the results are catastrophic. It's the same thing to put 75% of the bees in America in
and something
one
is
place.
Happening.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
the problem, and the plane's crashing.
So how do we know? I mean, how strong is the connection to neonicotinoids? Do we know that that's what's causing it, or is it still a mystery what's causing it?
There's been, you know, recently bees and other pollinators are still dying out in catastrophic rates, and There's a real public debate behind colony collapse disorder, and the main studies lately is that there are three separate studies in the last 6 months that have confirmed that the sublethal doses of pesticides act synergistically with, like, you know, the gut fungus, the Nosema, to increase mortality. And then the other one is the exposure to acutely toxic levels of clothidin, which is the neonicotinoid in the field, and it's in the poisonous dust or in the planters, the treated corn seeds. It all goes into the pollen, and they say, "Oh yeah, bees don't need to pollinate corn because it's a wind pollination," but bees still go to corn to get their pollen. And in getting the pollen off the corn, it has this deadly pesticide built into the pollen. And then they lose their sense of direction. They can't navigate back to the beehive. It's really tragic, but it's not just in the United States. It's in Europe. It's been banned in Germany, where it is made, this neonicotinoid. It's banned in France because they really love their bees, and, you know, so do we. But the French will get out and march and really make a very big statement. And that's what we're really trying to do now, is to wake up to the fact that we have a catastrophe on hand. And yes, we have many of those in the world, but this is about our food. And as much as science wants to, like, solve this problem with a silver bullet, it's not solvable unless we go back to more diverse agriculture, more biodynamic or organic farming methods, and treat bees with respect, and everything will be a lot happier.
Is there colony collapse disorder in Europe, in these places that have banned the neonicotinoids? Do they have the problem to the same extent that we do?
Not as much. France, they've had a much better season with bees because of the banning of the neonicotinoids. So, but you know, if you look at the situation of bees for the last 100 years, and Rudolf Steiner, the creator of biodynamic farming and the Waldorf system, he did 7 lectures on bees back in the 1920s, and he predicted that bees would die out if we continue the practice of industrialized very intensive industrialized farming, and bees are part of that system where if we over queen breed and we use machinery to do everything and use chemicals, the bees would die out in 80 to 100 years. And that's exactly what happened, and this was a prediction in the 1920s. So we have to look at our whole system that we've put in place, where bees were once a very sacred species or animal. The Egyptians worshipped them. The Mayans worshipped them. They knew that everything comes from these pollinators, the source of life. And so now we kind of use them as almost slaves and machinery, and they're just part of, like, trying to get that crop in. But what we're doing is ruining their immune system, because we're over queen breeding, which is a very big factor too, which is usually not looked at, where the queen's genetic makeup has weakened. She used to live like 4 to 6 years. Now they replace the queen often 2 times a year.
So oh my God.
They're replacing the queen like a spark plug. Like, if she doesn't lay 1,500 eggs, you know, a day, which is an immense amount of work, it's more than her body weight, then they start seeing her when she's not laying enough eggs, and we're going to get rid of her and replace her. So this kind of, like, always wanting the best, you know, we're not letting nature build its immune system, and the Darwinian idea of, like, the strongest survives. Well, we're not even allowing them to do that anymore.
When we come back from a quick break, I want to talk about artificially inseminating bees, and maybe the dumbest idea I've ever heard.
We're talking with Taggart Siegel. His documentary film is The Queen of the Sun. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on the Heritage Radio Network and at restaurantguysradio.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants, and also of The Restaurant Guys Radio Show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to restaurantguysradio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys, and we're talking with Taggart Siegel about the Queen of the Sun. What are the bees telling us?
Taggart, you were talking about how much pressure we're putting on the queen bees to perform, and when they don't perform, we're simply ousting them from the hive and creating another queen.
That's no way to treat a lady.
I'm sorry. It's so true.
But let's talk about how unnatural a process that is, what they're doing.
Yes, well, you know, the artificial insemination isn't the common practice. Queen breeding is the common practice, where the often beekeepers do their own queen breeding, and they multiply the queens, and they're not really letting nature decide what the strongest queen is. They're just selecting all the queens, and then that queen becomes a kind of like a commodity. They could go sell that queen for $5 or $10 or $30. To other beekeepers out there in the world. And in ways, it's kind of a system that has been set up and a very necessary thing. But the thing is that we keep breeding out their really natural instincts and their strength. You know, we're always breeding bees to be gentle, or breeding them to be bigger. You know, so they produce more honey, And all this thing is really hurting bees because they're not being treated with the respect that they want. So when artificial insemination is used in laboratories a lot, they're actually inseminating the queen. They actually open her up and squeeze the sperm from the male into her. And it's just like it's in test tubes, and it's like saying that man knows better. Like man knows, like this drone, the male, is the right drone, and this queen is the right queen, instead of letting nature figure that out.
And normally many drones would be involved in that process, not just one,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's the beautiful thing about a nuptial flight or her wedding flight, is she flies up 600 feet into the air, and she mates with 15, 20 drones, males, and the strongest ones are the ones that mate with her. And that's what creates strong bees. That's why it's always better to get a swarm when you start beekeeping, because when you have a swarm, you know that there's some, like it's trying to return back to nature. You know they've swarmed, and then you let that queen go and mate or the new queen goes and mates with the new drones, and you know the bees are strengthened. It's kind of returning back to the natural way, which is a big movement that's going on now.
So is it really possible that this is all due to the fact that the queen bee's not getting laid enough in this new paradigm? Really? There's a whole lot less bee sex going on here, it seems.
I think that's like, you know, and it's man. Can you imagine man? Like, you've seen the film where they, you know, we have that animation section where they're just like picking up drones and putting the queen in the test tube and squeezing out the sperm. It's just a way that is artificial. It's not the way things need to be done in nature. I think that we get in the way too much, and we're not listening. And as Einstein said, only through a renewed sense of awe and wonder, through a regained reverence for all that exists, will we be able to heal the deep separation and estrangement that we have with nature. And so this is why everybody seems to be now waking up about the bees. And I actually think that's what awakened me with nature. Like, I'm much closer to everyday nature now because I go out and I have bees in my backyard, and I sort of, you know, see what they're doing, what they're pollinating, what they're bringing in on their pollen sacks. And it really connects my backyard to this ecosystem. And then I'm imagining all throughout Portland, where I live, there are hundreds of beekeepers now. So there's this whole new movement going on to help save bees.
You know, I want to put a little plug in for the film, and you can find out more about it at our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Look under the link for Taggart Show. But you can also go to queenofthesun.com, and you can find out about the movie and where you can see it. It's not just a dry documentary. It sort of interweaves beekeepers, scientists, philosophers, regular people. It's a pretty artistic film. The film opens with bees swarming across and bees swarming a woman. It's about the human interaction with bees. What informs the aesthetic of the film?
Well, I believe it's really good to tell a really strong story and to have the film filled with colorful characters. And so that's why I went around the world and filmed the Frenchman that tickles his bees with his mustache, and he chants Hindu chants.
Right there, worth seeing the film, just for that one, right there.
Yeah, that guy is amazing. And if you imagine Sarah Marpelli, the woman that called me up and saying, I'm going to dance with bees, with 12,000 bees, will you come and film me? And I was just like, sure. This was my first shoot with bees, and watching this woman crawling on the ground, you know, and bees being put on her body, and suddenly she's dancing for an hour and a half with 12,000 bees on her body. It was just incredible. She was like a living swarm. They all swarmed around her. But, you know, what this comes back to is our food, too. It's just like our appreciation of food, and also appreciation of honey, because nothing like really good, clean, biodynamic or organic honey that is doesn't have pesticides. That is, you know that the bees have been treated really well. And honey is just, it's something that's been worshipped for just for thousands of years, and they find them in the tomb of Egyptian tombs, that honey is still edible after 2,000, 3,000 years.
That is absolutely amazing.
What other food can last that long?
I got a couple things in my freezer that I'm not... but one thing about bees is they're... In this part of the country, bees, I think, get a bad rap because we have, you know, other bugs called like yellow jackets and wasps and things like that. And they're not the same, are they?
No, yellow jackets that come around when you're at your picnic table. I mean, as a kid, I used to see these yellow jackets that I thought were bees. And, you know, you want to just get them out of there and you get stung and you hate them and you're scared of them. And really, those are wasps. They're carnivores. They love that bologna. They love that chicken sandwich that you're having. You're not going to see bees flying around your picnic table. Bees like to go to flowers and get the love essence of that flower, the sweet nectar, and bring that back and put it into their stomach and create honey. So most of the time, bees aren't what stings people. It's yellow jackets. But, you know, wasps even have a role in this world. They, like ants and like bees, they have formic acid. They release a little bit of formic acid on plants everywhere they go around the world, and that helps create life on Earth. Formic acid is a very key chemical that brings life kind of brings life out. Like in springtime, things bursting forth is from the help of formic acid. And so wasps are contributing too. We want to kill all the wasps, but, you know, even they have a role.
In a way, it's funny because the wasps haven't suffered the same fate as the bees because the wasps don't have the same, aren't as necessary in the same useful economic
We don't bring all the wasps together in one place for a little party.
Yeah, we don't overbreed them. We try to kill them with pesticides or insecticides, but we don't try to, like, breed them or make them stronger or weaker or whatever. Bees have been, imagine 10,000 years of evolution of man and bees. I mean, and it ties in so closely to agriculture. And that's just the kind of the reality. Bees are now more like, you know, raising cattle for some beekeepers. It's not like out of respect and where they, you know, honey, you never even sold honey in the 1900s. In the 1800s, you would give it as a gift. It was just something that was very special. It wasn't something that was, you know, a commodity.
Well, I look forward to the next film, the horror film by Taggart Siegel, King of the Wasps, which hopefully will be out sometime in the next. I'm kidding about that. Listen, Taggart, the movie was great. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Taggart.
Thank you, and please join us on Facebook and come to queenofthesun.com, and we'd love to hear from you.
Taggart's film is Queen of the Sun, What the Bees Are Telling Us, and you should go and see it as soon as you can. You can check that out at queenofthesun.com or restaurantguysradio.com. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on the Heritage Radio Network and at restaurantguysradio.com. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, The Restaurant Guys. Pretty scary stuff, I think, don't you?
Yeah, I've been scared of bees for a long time.
Kill them all. Kill them all. Kill all the bees.
but seriously, I don't know if you remember this, but years ago, we had a maitre d' in the restaurant, and she was deathly afraid of bees. Just absolutely deathly afraid of them, and it was an irrational fear, and she knew it was an irrational fear. And she took a trip, I'm going to say 10 years ago, to do Habitat for Humanity.
Yeah.
Down in Costa Rica.
Yeah.
And while she was down on that trip, she was you know, reacquainting herself with nature.
Yeah.
And they had,
That's where bees live.
Well, they had, a beekeeper who was there, and she participated in one of the where the bees swarm all over your body, and she someone convinced her that it would be good for her, and she completely got rid of her fear of bees. She let the bees swarm on her, and you know, like you saw in the movie,
yeah.
And they swarmed on her, and she has gotten rid of her fear of bees. It was she now realizes it was an irrational fear. But talk about brave. You're afraid of bees, and you let like 10,000 bees land on you.
Well, Mark, I have a slightly different take on that. I did see in the movie where the woman let the bees swarm on her, and she danced with the bees swarming on her.
Yeah, I don't think Rachel danced with the bees swarming on her.
I did see it, though, through squinted eyes going, oh.
Because you've never had bees swarm on you and realized how in touch with nature you are when the bees are swarming on you.
I am so sure that right now I don't have a large fear of bees, but if that ever happened to me, I would gain a fear of bees. I don't need bugs on me of any sort, much less 20,000 of them.
I had a, when I was very young, I sat on a wasp hole when I was a kid, and the wasps got mad.
They do that.
And they chased us out of the baseball park, and I got stung like 8 times, and it was awful.
How old were you?
Like 6. No, not even. Where I was living, I must have been 5.
And they chased who? Who was
They chased me, my brother, and our friends out of the field that we were playing baseball in, back to the apartments we were living in.
Do you know that African killer bees...
They were not African killer bees.
No, they weren't.
This was way before there was even a thing.
Well, and the African killer bees, as they came farther north, if they had stayed as vitriolic as they were when they came up, what happened was they got less and less aggressive as they came north. But those African killer bees, and there are some down in the southwest, you're lucky it wasn't them.
Oh, yeah.
Because they chase you. And by the way, what people do is they go you go underwater and you dive in a hole. They'll wait for up to a half an hour. They will
and
wait.
And still be mad.
For a half an hour. The last thing I need is a bug with resolve. So these aren't killer bees.
Well, what's interesting is as the killer bees have moved north, they were very concerned that they were going to, you know.
Now they're just assaulting bees. They're misdemeanor bees. They're class 3 felony bees now.
What happened is they were afraid that they were going to mix with other bees and become, you know.
Make all the bees angry.
Make all the bees angry. And what's happened is kind of they've softened their demeanor a little.
Yeah. still not pleasant.
I still have no desire to come across a swarm of killer bees.
Yeah. No, not at all. But they really don't earn their name anymore.
Yeah.
Do you remember we did a show we talked about there was a.
We just won't shut up, will
we? I know. We're running up against the wall of time. But do you remember we did the show where the bees around here had found a candy company or a food production company.
Oh,
that
yeah.
The red-colored corn syrup uncovered.
It was the corn syrup, right, exactly.
And the bees were turning red, and they were like...
And the hive was turning red corn syrup colory.
Not really a fair exchange if you take honey from the bees and you give them corn syrup.
You know, that was in the movie, and I just thought...
What a ripoff.
Really? We're giving the bees corn syrup and taking their honey?
You make honey and have sex a lot. We take away you're having sex a lot, and... You get corn syrup instead of honey. What a ripoff for the bees.
Seems so wrong.
What a ripoff. I'd be mad, too.
We're definitely doing it.
I would
again.
Collapse my colony, too, just to show you, mothers. Anyway, hope you guys have enjoyed the hour as much as we have. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys on the Heritage Radio Network and RestaurantGuysRadio.com.